Let's put the women and children to bed and go looking for dinner. John Rothstein here on Inside College Basketball Now on CBS Sports Network. We want to remind you to subscribe to Inside College Basketball Now on both Apple and Spotify. We want to be your Bible for the college basketball season and beyond. We are the only college basketball podcast coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also want to remind you to like and subscribe to Inside College Basketball Now on YouTube. And in addition to hitting the like button, also hit the hype button to spread the palpable buzz that is needed for Inside College Basketball Now from coast to coast like butter and toast. And in addition to today's show right here on CBS Sports Network, Inside College Basketball Now will be bringing you additional episodes each and every week featuring exclusive interviews with some of the biggest and best names in the sport. And again, remember, if you can't be with us live today, make us a part of your afternoon commute or your early morning workout. We need an army with us here on each and every show on Inside College Basketball Now, and we need you to be all you can be. Now, we are going to jump into our ACC offseason breakdown here in just a couple of minutes. It is unbelievable to me that we are about to flip the calendar later this week into August. I was down the Jersey Shore over the weekend visiting with some people from college, and I got thinking about what's ahead, being in a situation where we are now inching closer and closer to the start of the college basketball season. I know we're a few months away, but I will say this. I can't remember a time where we had as many big games in college basketball in November and December as we do now in college basketball's current format. Later, obviously, in the preseason, I'm going to document all of these big games, give you what I think is really, really good. But I can't believe, to me, just looking ahead, what's in store for the college basketball fan in November, December. You never used to get this. You never used to have this type of energy early in the season. It has amplified the sport, no doubt, and it has made people like me think more and more during these summer vacations about what's ahead during the college basketball season. Why is that? Because we enjoy catching up with friends. We enjoy toasting Peronis and cutting up Jarlsberg and exchanging pleasantries. And some people like to, you know, on the Jersey Shore, go to Atlantic City, play the tables, do this and do that. But as I explained last week, it's all about how you're wired. And for me, the action is the juice. The juice is sitting behind the microphone and talking to you. The juice is breaking down and prognosticating what could be ahead for certain themes in college basketball. And today, we dive in to the ACC in 26-27, a conference that redeemed itself in terms of its national stature last year by putting eight teams into the NCAA tournament in 2026. But what's in store for 26-27? As always, we kick it off with three big things on the ACC. And the first big thing, now when I look at the ACC for 26-27, revolves around a team in Durham, North Carolina. And this could be Duke's best team yet under John Shire. That is not hyperbole. Now, Duke is not going to have a player the caliber of Cooper Flagg like it did 2 years ago or Cam Boozer like it had a year ago. Both players won the National Player of the Year award in their respective seasons. But I firmly believe, looking at Duke's roster this season, this could be the best Duke team that we've seen yet under John Shire. Now, Duke has been a number one seed in the NCAA tournament in each of the past 2 years, and Duke has had backbreaking losses in the NCAA tournament. As we look at this graphic, John Shire, 11 NCAA tournament wins in his first four seasons as a head coach. Steve Fisher, the only guy to do more of that in the victory column when he was at Michigan. Duke has had brutal losses in the NCAA tournament, won 2 years ago to Houston in the Final Four, and then last year, obviously, the epic loss to UConn in the Elite Eight. But sooner or later, when you are continually at bat in sports, sooner or later, you are going to break through. And this could be that season for John Shire. And the more and more you split the atom, the more and more you look at the overall landscape of college basketball, to me, there are two teams that are standing above the rest when it comes to this sport: Florida and Duke. I think you can make a case for certain teams to obviously be right behind those. You can talk about Illinois. You can talk about UConn. You can talk about Michigan State because of what those programs have accomplished under their respective coaches in the last half decade, or in some cases like Tom Izzo, beyond that. But I think if you're looking at the two best teams in college basketball next year entering the season, it's going to be Duke and Florida. So why am I so bullish on Duke if it doesn't have a Cooper Flag and it doesn't have a Cameron Boozer? This is the deepest team that I have seen John Shire put together since he's become a head coach. And I'm willing to say this. I think when we're looking at projections for Duke's lineups, and I think if we're looking at what could be put on the floor, I'm projecting right now Duke to have Caleb Foster at the point, John Blackwell, the Wisconsin transfer, who was one of the major, major gets of the portal at the two, Dame Sarr in year two at the three, and then either Joaquin Boumjé or Cam Williams, the freshman, at the four, with Pat Gongba at the five. If you start Joaquin Boumjé, this is what Duke's second lineup would look like. Duke could come off the bench with Deron Rippey, a five-star freshman, maybe the best freshman in the class of 2026, Caden Boozer as a sophomore, Bryson Howard, a five-star freshman, Cam Williams, and then Drew Sharnowski from Belmont as a backup five, who, according to the well-embedded moles that I have in Durham, tell me has been a breakthrough star for Duke this summer. Drew Sharnowski, the Duke people I talk to, can't get enough accolades. He is going to be a player, the transfer from Belmont, in the low post for the Blue Devils. So I'm looking at Duke from a depth perspective right now, and I'm saying to myself, if Duke was a separate team and it started Deron Rippey, Caden Boozer, Bryson Howard, and also Cam Williams and Drew Sharnowski, I think we would see a scenario where that team could be ranked in the back end of the top 25. That's what I think of Duke's talent. No Boozer, no Cooper Flag, but a team, again, to me, that could be the best rendition of Duke that we have seen under John Shire. Another thing I think we need to look at is what the competition is going to be like in Duke practice every single day on the perimeter. Because Caleb Foster, John Blackwell, Dame Sarr are all proven college players. But those three perimeter reserves, Rippey, Bryson Howard, Caden Boozer, all, in my opinion, could be starters on many other teams. But they just happen to be playing for the Regal program in Durham, North Carolina. Duke, again, in my opinion, on track to be a one seed in the NCAA tournament and a heavy, heavy favorite in the ACC this season. The second big thing, when I look at the ACC in 26-27, there is a new dawn at North Carolina. Now, I am going to be 43 years old in September. So for 42 years and, let's say, about 11 months, I have known the following coaches at the University of North Carolina: Dean Smith, Bill Guthridge, Roy Williams, and Hubert Davis. So all of those head coaches had something in common. They were all head coaches at the University of North Carolina, but every coach following Dean Smith, Coach Guthridge, Coach Williams, and also Coach Davis, were all assistants at the school and had a tie to the Tar Heel circle and the Tar Heel brand before becoming the head coach at the University of North Carolina. There is a new dawn, though, in Chapel Hill, with Michael Malone taking over for Hubert Davis. It is a new era of North Carolina basketball. Michael Malone has tremendous pedigree, winning an NBA championship with the Denver Nuggets. He is somebody, again, who is coming from the NBA and trying to make the transition, not just to college basketball, but to make the transition to the bluest of blue bloods, the University of North Carolina. Again, it is the first time since before Dean Smith that somebody has coached North Carolina that did not directly have a tie to the school, even though Michael Malone's daughter is a student at the University of North Carolina. I'm going to say this. North Carolina last year was a power team under Hubert Davis, and it had arguably the best 4-5 in college basketball, or one of the top 4-5s in college basketball, with Caleb Wilson and Henry Vessar. This team is going to be the complete opposite. This team is going to be built on its perimeter, Virginia Tech transfer Neo Abdalis, Utah transfer Terrence Brown, and also NC State transfer Matthew Abel. That will be the backbone of North Carolina basketball under Mike Malone in year one, which who will also return Jaren Stevenson from last year's team that made the NCAA tournament and lost to VCU after Caleb Wilson was lost for the season. I got to visit with Michael Malone a couple of weeks ago in Las Vegas at a recruiting event. Really enjoyed my time with him. Really pleasant guy. Seems like he completely has bought into recruiting and is involved with a lot of the top prospects in the class of 2027. North Carolina is a brand like no other. When you talk about the history and lineage, when you look at the players that have played there, Jordan, Carter, Jamison, Stackhouse, Wallace, the list goes on and on. But we are at a time right now, and I've said this ad nauseum on this show, where we don't have blue blood programs really resonating in college basketball in the NIL era outside of Duke and UConn. And it's going to be fascinating to see what North Carolina ascends to under a head coach that does not have a tie to the school, but does come into North Carolina with incredible, incredible pedigree. If I'm looking at North Carolina from a basketball perspective, I think there's good promise on the perimeter with the players that I mentioned, Avdalis, Brown, and Abel. Stevenson is a seasoned veteran at the four. I think this team is a little thin up front. I think this is a team that will start, at least in my rankings, to start next season in the 25 to 30 range starting the 26-27 season. But I expect North Carolina to be an NCAA tournament team, and I think it's going to be really interesting to see how Michael Malone puts his imprint on North Carolina basketball, which, again, is going to be determined in a lot of ways by how this program does in the 2027 recruiting class and how North Carolina does on the floor in its first season under Michael Malone, playing a great schedule, a home game against Arkansas as part of the ACC-SEC Challenge. There's also a couple of series with a couple of different power conference schools, Georgetown, Butler, Georgia, and then there's obviously the CBS Sports Classic where North Carolina will take on Kentucky at Madison Square Garden. The third big thing I'm thinking about when I'm looking at the ACC is that Virginia is underrated nationally. Now, I am somebody who is really, really big in this climate right now on teams that retain a high percentage of their players from the season the year prior. Virginia has the highest percentage of returning scoring among teams in the ACC. Virginia has four guys back who played major minutes on a team that won 30 games and was a three seed in the NCAA tournament. You see right there the graphic, Virginia 57.4% of its scoring. No other ACC team has more than 40.4, that's Duke. So you see Virginia with a distinct advantage over other teams in this conference in terms of the returning scoring by percentage. I'm looking at Virginia, and I'm seeing, again, a lot of components back from a team that was a three seed, lost in the second round of the NCAA tournament to a really, really good Tennessee team. But I also see a Virginia team that has a chance to have multiple All-ACC players. Testa Ritter is going to be an All-ACC preseason first-team guy for me. There's no doubt about that. Johan Grunlo is a player, again, that will be back in year two. So if you're Ryan Odom, you got your guys up front at your four and your five. Sam Lewis is a proven marksman throughout his college career at Toledo and at the University of Virginia, as we saw last season. And then the guy I think that's the wild card for this team is going to be Chance Mallory. Chance Mallory, I thought, was a little bit of a forgotten guy among Virginia's core last year because there were so many newcomers because Ryan Odom completely flipped that roster. Chance Mallory is somebody who could become an absolute star during the 26-27 college basketball season. Put up big numbers last year as a freshman in his role, and as a sophomore, his emergence and his potential emergence to becoming an All-ACC player could in a lot of ways determine if Virginia is able to challenge Duke for an ACC regular season title. Remember, Virginia was very, very competitive with Duke last year in the ACC tournament, just that it ran into a tough and seasoned Tennessee team in the NCAA tournament that I think, you know, was on its way to, again, being the Elite Eight for the third straight year. So I think if you're looking at the top of this conference, Duke is your clear favorite. You have to pay respect to Virginia. And now you have to look at North Carolina as being a fascinating team to follow under a head coach, Michael Malone, who is a head coach in college, returning to college basketball after spending time at Manhattan under Bobby Gonzalez and under Pete Gillen at Providence as part of that run to the 1997 Elite Eight. How would I slate the rest of the ACC if I was going to put out some ACC preseason power rankings? I will give you all that and more when we return. John Rothstein here on Inside College Basketball Now on CBS Sports Network. Welcome back to Inside College Basketball Now on CBS Sports Network with John Rothstein. Let's continue now with our ACC offseason breakdown. We are going to move forward with our ACC preseason power rankings. Number one, obviously, is going to be the team from Durham, North Carolina, the Duke Blue Devils. Duke, again, back-to-back, one seed in the NCAA tournament. To me, the prohibitive favorite in this conference. Number two, I am going to go with Virginia, year two under Ryan Odom. Again, just over 57% of scoring is back for the Cavs, who won 30 games last year and were a three seed in the NCAA tournament. Louisville is in the three spot for me. Obviously, a big time portal season for Pat Kelsey and the Cardinals. Jackson Shellstead coming over from Oregon. Also, Flory Badunga coming over from Kansas, a big time defensive anchor. Alvaro Fulgueros, the hero for Iowa against Florida in the NCAA tournament, brings some veteran experience as a skilled forward. Carter Knox coming over from Arkansas. But Louisville, again, with a major, major portal haul. Miami at the four spot. Jay Lucas has done yeoman's work as head coach of the Hurricanes. This is his first head coaching job in Division I. Had a big-time portal class as well, getting a Caden Lewis from Villanova. Also getting Samto Cyril from Georgia. Shelton Henderson should be, in my opinion, a first-team All-ACC caliber player in 26-27. Number five, the North Carolina Tar Heels under Michael Malone, a first-year head coach who comes with great NBA pedigree, winning a championship with the Nuggets. Carolina, a perimeter-centric team this season. Again, keep an eye on what Neo Avdalis, the transfer from Virginia Tech, can do under Malone. Clemson, the consistent program that everybody loves in the ACC under Brad Brunell, now a regular participant in the NCAA tournament. A couple of things to keep an eye on. One is the health of Carter Welling, who suffered a knee injury late last season. He's a big-time factor for that basketball team. A couple of transfers, though, I'm keeping an eye on. Cole Serta from Notre Dame and Litoris Lelovicius from TCU. Good pieces at their last couple of schools. Clemson should, again, be an NCAA tournament team under Brad Brunell. I have Syracuse in the seventh spot. The Orange have not played in the NCAA tournament since 2021 when they went to the Sweet 16 under Jim Boeheim. It's been a long drought for Syracuse, but Jerry McNamara arrives at his alma mater after being at Siena, taking Duke to the wire in the NCAA tournament in a 1-16 game. The talent is not vintage Syracuse talent. Sadiq White, I have pegged for a big-time season. Kyan Anthony is back, the son of Carmelo Anthony. And then in the backcourt, Garway Duel and also Aiden Tobiasen from Temple. It does not look, in my opinion, like a vintage Syracuse roster, but I do think we saw from Jerry McNamara at Siena that there is something to be said for a coach like him who is going to coach the way that he played. And we can see that Syracuse's projected starting five, Luke Wilson, a transfer from App State, rounding things out at the five, a guy who coaches the way that he played as a player. And Jim Boeheim has said this time and time again, he was the toughest guy that he ever coached, Jerry McNamara was. And he will have to embody all of those attributes and more to get Syracuse back to March Madness in 2027. Orange have not played in the NCAA tournament again since 2021. Sneaky good team out of Blacksburg in the eighth spot. That's Virginia Tech. Mike Young, one of the great offensive coaches we have in the sport. You see my projected lineup there for Virginia Tech. Returning guys of significance, Ben Hammond at the point of attack, and also Imani Hansberry, both, in my opinion, have all ACC caliber potential. Virginia Tech, a team that, again, with the NCAA tournament going to 76, I think have an excellent chance to be a part of March Madness in 2027. Number nine, the last team in the top half of the ACC, I'm going to Western Pennsylvania, and I'm looking at the Pitt Panthers. There was a lot of questions as to whether or not Jeff Capel would return as Pitt's coach this season. He did get the vote of confidence. He did come back, and he did put together a nice haul out of the transfer portal. Nate George, Jaleel Bethea, Bayan Dungo, all guys who were heavily recruited out of high school. They find their way in Western Pennsylvania, and Jonathan Powell played major minutes at North Carolina. I think the talent base here for Pitt is a little bit better than people expect. Number 10, I'm going with SMU. SMU under Andy Enfield made the NCAA tournament last year, lost to Miami of Ohio in Dayton. Little bit of a bridge year for the Ponies. Jaden Toombs, though, to me, a potential breakout guy at the five. Jalen Stewart coming by way of UConn, a guy who played, you know, bench minutes for Dan Hurley the last couple of years. Florida State's in the 11 hole under second-year coach Luke Laux. Laux did a really nice job turning around Florida State last year after a disappointing start to the season. Anthony Robinson, a transfer from Missouri, going to get a lot of run at the five spot. Sean Abayev comes by way of Cincinnati, and then Sebastian Rancic from Colorado. Ponder there at the five is a freshman of note that people are very high on in Tallahassee. In the 12 spot, we have NC State, year one under Justin Gainey. The jewel of this transfer class is Christian Hammond from Santa Clara, was a part of the Santa Clara team that nearly beat Kentucky in the NCAA tournament. Darius Adams comes by way of Maryland. Kyle Evans from UC Irvine. McNeil, though, the retention of Paul McNeil, a guy who could be among the top 10 players in the ACC, was a major retention piece for Justin Gainey. 13, I'm going with Kyle Smith and Stanford. Kyle Smith, one of the best coaches in college basketball, has always done great at really difficult jobs. That is Stanford. You're going to lose Abuka Okoro to the first round of the NBA draft. Okoro was sensational last year. Young backcourt with Slim Rogers and Azeez Olajuwon, but Kyle Smith will have Stanford, again, overachieving in the ACC. 14 is Notre Dame. I don't know if I've seen a power conference program more robbed of a promising nucleus due to a lack of NIL resources more than Notre Dame. As you look at the projected starting five this year, not a bad backcourt. Braden Smith comes from Gonzaga to go along with Braden Shrewsbury. But Notre Dame lost Marcus Burton to Indiana, Cole Serta to Clemson, also Jalen Harrelson to Tennessee. There was an NCAA tournament team in place in South Bend, but retention, the name of the game in this landscape. Wake Forest is going to be 15 for me in my ACC offseason breakdown as far as power rankings go. Steve Forbes, talking to him this summer, is very, very optimistic that his team is better than people anticipate. But again, like we're seeing at a lot of these programs that don't have the resources, a straight rebuild. Kennedy comes by way of Merrimack, Jabari McDowell from Kansas, and then Antonio Dorn coming over with some power conference experience from Virginia Tech. Luke Murray, the UConn assistant that had a big hand in the offense as UConn went 18-2 over 4 years in the NCAA tournament, as the new head coach at Boston College. Boston College is going to be 16th in my ACC offseason breakdown. I was up at practice last week in Chestnut Hill. Really good offensive concepts, really good focus on conditioning, really good shooting. I'm curious how Boston College, a program that hasn't been to the NCAA tournament since 2009, is going to be able to rebound and be physical enough at the power conference level. That's why Brandon Benjamin from Fairfield, to me, is the wild card for that team. But BC is going to have a great assist to turnover ratio and probably going to have to average 8 to 10 made threes a game to finish higher than the 16th ranking in the ACC. Cal is in the 17th spot in the ACC. Mark Mattson, I thought, did a great job last year. Had Cal on the brink of the bubble for a lot of the season, But like I was talking about with Notre Dame, Cal has had retention issues the last couple years. This past season, lost Day-Day Ames to Tennessee, lost Justin Pippen to Ohio State. Jordan Ross coming over by way of Georgia, as is Jake Wilkins. So those are two names to keep an eye on. But Cal, again, not projected to be a team at the top of the ACC. And then in the 18th spot in the ACC, I'm going to go with Georgia Tech, year one under Scott Cross. Cam Kraft was able to be retained. Then you see the rest of the roster right there. Victor Valdez, somebody who played for Scott Cross at Troy, a team last year that went to the NCAA tournament. Not pictured in that projected starting five, is a nice piece from Lehigh in Nasir Whitlock, who was a part of that team's run in the Patriot League. We're going to go through now some ACC early season awards when we return. John Rothstein here on Inside College Basketball Now on CBS Sports Network. All right, John Rothstein back here on Inside College Basketball Now on CBS Sports Network. Time now for our ACC preseason awards. We start, of course, with my all-ACC preseason first team. I'm only adding five guys. Remember that. I'm not adding a player more. We are going to start at the five spot with Duke big man Pat Gongba, who I think should have a monster year for the Blue Devils. Florida Badunga at Louisville by way of Kansas is also there, as is Tess DeRitter from Virginia. Shelton Henderson, I am putting on there from Miami, ready to explode like a volcano. And then John Blackwell, the transfer from Wisconsin, who averaged 19.1 points per game and 5.1 rebounds per game a year ago for the Badgers, rounding out my all-ACC preseason first team. Who is my all-ACC preseason player of the year? It's John Blackwell from Duke. John Blackwell was somebody that Duke targeted in the transfer portal, somebody who put up big numbers at Wisconsin for years, but he wanted to go to a place where he had a chance to play at the highest levels of college basketball. No disrespect to Wisconsin, which is a great program, but he wanted to play at the highest levels of college basketball and have a chance to compete for a national championship. He will be able to do that at Duke, who I again firmly believe has a chance to be the best Duke team that we have seen yet under John Shire. May not have the first pick in the draft like he had the past 2 years with Cooper Flagg, and obviously he didn't, one of the top picks in the draft, I should say, because Cooper Flagg was the top pick, you know, 2 years ago, and Cam Boozer was one of the top picks. You may not have a top pick in the draft necessarily, but I think that because of Blackwell's addition, you have the bona fide perimeter scoring that you need. And you also have guys back, which is so big in college basketball. Duke does not have as many guys back as Virginia, but you still have Gongba, Caden Boozer, Caleb Foster, Dame Sarr back from that run to the Elite Eight when you lost to UConn. I now am going to transition to my ACC preseason sleeper, and I am going to Western Pennsylvania to Jeff Capel and the Pitt Panthers. Now, I look at Pitt's program under Jeff Capel, and I look at when Pitt had momentum a couple of years ago. Pitt in 2023 made the NCAA tournament, beat Mississippi State and Dayton, then went on to beat Iowa State in the round of 64 before losing to Xavier in the round of 32. Pitt then, the next year, was one of the first teams out of the NCAA tournament, was right on the bubble on Selection Sunday. And I think what's happened is Pitt, like a lot of power conference programs, similar to what I just said about Wisconsin not being able to retain John Blackwell because he went to Duke, Pitt has not had a talent acquisition problem. It has had a retention problem. Jalen Lowe was initially recruited and secured by Jeff Capel at Pitt to play college basketball in the 412. He transferred to Kentucky, and he has since transferred to Georgetown. Bub Carrington was somebody who was a heck of a recruit, but he went early to the NBA. It's not a talent acquisition problem. It's a retention problem. And a lot of that is normally in this climate directly tied to what your NIL budget is. But now I'm looking at this Pitt roster, and I like what I see. I've always been a big fan of Nate George. Have been a big fan of Bayan Dungo. Jahlil Bethea is somebody who, again, when he initially committed to Miami, was somebody who was highly, highly thought of in terms of his long-term potential. These players are all on the Pitt roster. Jonathan Powell is somebody, again, who has played in North Carolina's rotation. I think, and you have to look at it like this now, in a 76-team tournament, this is a team that could compete for a berth to March Madness in 2027. Five impact ACC freshmen right now. Again, these are in no particular order, but they're names to keep an eye on when we look at impact freshmen in the ACC. Three guys from Duke, Joaquin Boumje, Cam Williams, and also Deron Rippey. Obinna Akizi at Louisville, and then Caleb Gaskins at Miami. Again, you can see the note right there. Due to eligibility inconsistencies by the NCAA, foreign players are not included in this list. Now, let's look at some breakout guys in the ACC. And again, these are in no particular order. And according to my criteria, you cannot be eligible for a breakout list if you've previously averaged in double figures. I'm going with Dame Sarr at Duke. Again, he started on last year's team that was a one seed in the NCAA tournament, went to the Elite Eight. Adrian Woolley, a holdover from last year's Louisville team. I love that Louisville retained this guy. He should help Louisville bridge the gap moving forward. Dante Allen, I think, could be a big-time shot maker to take pressure off both of Caden Lewis and Caleb Gaskins, as well as Shelton Henderson, Sadiq White at Syracuse, and then my guy, Chance Mallory at Virginia, I think is on right now on pace to be poised for a massive, massive breakout season, and that's the guy who will control the ceiling in Charlottesville, Chance Mallory. We will take your social media questions when we return. Send me your questions on Twitter. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. This is Inside College Basketball Now on CBS Sports Network. All right, John Rothstein back here on Inside College Basketball Now on CBS Sports Network as we continue our ACC offseason breakdown. Time now for our social media portion of the show. Send me your questions on Twitter. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. Bearded Blue Devil wants to know, John, with Duke's roster, everyone talks about their ceiling. What do you think their floor is? Look, I have said repeatedly, I think this could be the best Duke team we have seen yet under John Shire. That doesn't necessarily mean that Duke is going to have a player the caliber it's had the last 2 years with Cooper Flagg and Cameron Boozer, but I think the depth, I think the perimeter depth, I think when you look at the addition of John Blackwell, I think when you look at the options up front with Gangba, Sharnowski, Boumje, Cam Williams, I think if you want to talk about Duke's ceiling, it's to obviously win the national championship. What do I think Duke's floor is? I mean, the floor for me for Duke is to be a top 16 seed in the NCAA tournament. I would be shocked if the Blue Devils are at least not that. I think there's two teams right now entering next season that are above the rest. Florida and Duke. Those teams are 1-2 in my opinion, and those teams, of course, will meet in the ACC-SEC Challenge in Gainesville. Next question, please. Cuse Chat wants to know, John, with Jerry McNamara taking over for Syracuse, what are you looking for in year one, and what does realistic success look like for Syracuse basketball? Well, look, anytime you make a hire of a guy like Jerry McNamara, who has the pedigree, the history, and the winning tradition that he has had at Syracuse, it is going to galvanize the fan base. You are talking about a college basketball icon in Jerry McNamara, not just because of what he did in the 2003 run to the national championship, but he also had an incredible, incredible career, which featured a Sweet 16 berth in 2004, a Big East tournament title in 2005, and a Big East tournament title in 2006. I will say this, though. Jerry McNamara is not playing for Syracuse. Syracuse does not have vintage Syracuse talent. There are pieces that I am optimistic about. I think Sadiq White will make a major step forward. I think that Aiden Tobiasen from Temple is a good-looking prospect, has real potential. I think that Garway Duel maybe could emerge into something, obviously, of significance. This is, again, a guy who's been playing at multiple schools. But look, I am cautiously optimistic for Syracuse under Jerry McNamara, not because of the personnel on the roster this year, but because Jerry McNamara is the guy that is the one who's pulling the strings on the sideline. Jerry McNamara, to me, as competitive a person as I have met in 20 years doing this job. You have a 76-team NCAA tournament. What am I looking for in year one for Syracuse? To be in the NCAA tournament, to hear its name called on Selection Sunday. Syracuse has not been in the NCAA tournament since 2021. Next question, please. Robbie, the White Flash Bobby says, John, what are realistic expectations with NC State for year one and Justin Gainey? Top eight ACC finish. Look, I think the ACC after the top five, six, seven teams is pretty open. But there has, again, been a major roster turnover in Raleigh. You do retain Paul McNeil. That's why I'm cautiously optimistic for NC State. But NC State, I don't have forecasts right now to be a team in the top half of the league. You have a brand new roster. You do have an all-ACC player in Paul McNeil. But this is, again, not just a first-year head coach at NC State, but a first-time head coach in Justin Gainey. Next question, please. Max Schluter 3 says, John, how do you feel about Jay Lucas's Miami team heading into year two? I love the additions of Akaden Lewis and Samto Sirobo. I feel like people are sleeping on the return of Shelton Henderson. Well, I'm going to do a show here in the next couple of months about players who can become stars during the 26-27 college basketball season. Shelton Henderson is one of those players. I had Miami in the NCAA tournament last year in St. Louis. One game against Missouri, one game against Purdue. And you could see this guy is ready to explode like a volcano in 26-27. You add that to Akaden Lewis, to Dante Allen, a potential breakout guy, Caleb Gaskins, Cyril. Gaskins and Cyril anchor in the front court. Miami, to me, is a top 20 team to start next season. Next question, please. Christopher Carolan says, John, how much of an impact will Boom Jay make right away? Is he the early runaway favorite for 2028 ACC Player of the Year? Let's crawl before we can walk, because we got to focus on the 26-27 season. I spent a lot of time watching Joaquin Boumtje when I was on a family vacation in Denver in early July. You are looking at a guy who is going to be one of the best freshmen in college basketball and maybe one of the best players in the ACC. And this is where Duke's depth really comes into play. John Shire, to me, again, has the deepest team that he's ever had at Duke. And if you're looking at the front court, you have four options for serious, serious time. Cam Williams, Joaquin Boumtje at the four, and then you have Pat Gongba and Drew Sharnowski, the transfer from Belmont, coming up at the five spot. Duke does not have Flag. Duke does not have Cam Boozer, but Duke has the deepest team it's had yet under John Shire. One more question, please. Dan Quiggins is weighing in now as part of our ACC offseason breakdown, and he wants to know, do you think Louisville can finally challenge Duke in the ACC after a haul in the portal? Look, Louisville, and I'll be the first to admit it, under Pat Kelsey, has completely changed its national perception. Louisville has completely rejoined the party, but I'll say this. Louisville, in 2 years under Pat Kelsey, has one NCAA tournament win. When I think about teams, to me, that are best equipped and most equipped to challenge Duke in the ACC, the team that I'm looking to right away is Ryan Odom's Virginia Cavaliers. Now, this is why. In this climate, of all these rosters turning over in a major, major way, I'm looking at what is retained, and I'm looking at this Virginia basketball team right now getting back Testa Ritter, getting back Johan Grunloh, getting back Sam Lewis, getting back Chance Mallory, who I think will be one of the breakout players nationally next season. I am looking at that team as being the biggest challenger to Duke during the 26-27 season. But you guys know as well as I do, this is only July. We will put a bow on our ACC offseason breakdown when we return. John Rothstein here on Inside College Basketball Now on CBS Sports Network. All right, John Rothstein back here on Inside College Basketball Now on CBS Sports Network. I want to remind you to subscribe to Inside College Basketball Now on both Apple and Spotify. We want to be your Bible for the college basketball season and beyond. We are the only college basketball podcast coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also want to remind you to like and subscribe to Inside College Basketball Now on YouTube. And in addition to the like button, hit the hype button to spread the palpable buzz that is needed for Inside College Basketball Now from coast to coast, like butter and toast. And in addition to today's show, which aired on CBS Sports Network from 1 to 2 Eastern, Inside College Basketball Now will be bringing you additional episodes featuring some of the biggest and best names in the sport each and every week. And again, if you can't be with us live during these shows when they hit social media, make us part of your early morning commute or your afternoon workout or vice versa. We need an army with us for each and every show here on Inside College Basketball Now, and we need you to be all you can be. Now, I want to put a bow on this ACC offseason breakdown. Last year, the ACC had 8 teams reach the NCAA tournament. Duke, Virginia, North Carolina, Miami, SMU, NC State, Louisville, and Clemson. I think if you are the ACC now, and you're looking at being in a situation where you want to max out your representation in a 76-team NCAA tournament, you have to be aiming to get 10 teams in the bracket. That might be a little bit steep for the ACC, but the ACC, in my opinion, now has to maximize the opportunity to get mileage out of some of your better brands. The ACC hasn't gotten anything out of Syracuse in a half decade. That can't happen. The ACC hasn't gotten anything the last couple years out of Pitt. That could change this year. I like Pitt as a sleeper. The ACC hasn't gotten anything in a number of years out of Florida State. The ACC hasn't gotten anything out of Notre Dame. Those are all programs during a period of time that were mainstays in the NCAA tournament. To me, that's what has to happen for the ACC to regain its place among the Power Four conferences as not just being an afterthought. I'm looking now, and this is something you have to do when you're forecasting a 76-team NCAA tournament. If the four power conferences, the ACC, the Big 12, the SEC, and the Big 10, all got 10 teams in, that right there is 36 at-large bids. There's still 8 at-large bids after that for the Big East, for the new Pac-12, for the A-10. So there's the wiggle room, in my opinion, for the ACC to get 10 teams in the NCAA tournament. If you're asking me right now which ACC teams I would say are going to be in March Madness, Duke, Virginia, Miami, Carolina, Louisville, Clemson, that takes you to 6. After that, I think it's a little bit up in the air. Syracuse, Virginia Tech, Pitt, though, in my opinion, all have a chance. But the goal for the ACC should be 10. And I think that's what you have to aim for if you're a power conference in this climate. I would not shock me, though, as we are have now went through all of these conferences, it would not shock me for the SEC and the Big Ten in a 76-team NCAA tournament to push for 12 or 13 bids. I think that's where this is heading. And these are the new rules of the new normal. Because now you have to look at the scenario as it is. You are going to have conferences that are getting double-digit teams in the NCAA tournament with regularity. For the ACC, you got 8 last year. Now you have 7 more at-large spots because the new Pac-12 is going to take one of the at-large spots. I think the goal has to be 10 bids for the ACC, but you got to settle again on 8 or 9 if you can get it. Want to thank you, as always, for joining us for another off-season breakdown among the power conferences in college basketball. I'll be back, as I always am, throughout the week. I'm John Rothstein here on Inside College Basketball Now on CBS Sports Network, reminding you, at least for a couple more days, this is only July.
Paramount Podcasts.